Do you sometimes feel that your emotions take over in your relationships? Like if you're having an argument, for example, and you suddenly find that the anger seems to spiral out of control. Well, today we're talking about how understanding your brain and the structure of your brain and your central nervous system can help you have a deeper understanding in your relationships. If you'd like to find out more about this podcast, head over to therelationshipmazepodcast.com. Please press subscribe right now. And if you'd like to find out about how to improve your relationships, head over to therelationshipmaze.com, where we have other resources and our online course, The Relationship Maze. Welcome to today's podcast.
Yeah, and today we're going to talk about the brain. And very specifically, we thought we'd introduce you to a really helpful model that gives you a very visual idea about how the brain works. And then we want to unpack a little bit about why is this relevant? Why do we need to know how anything about our brain, really? How is this relevant to our relationships? And we'll get to that in a minute. But first of all, we wanted to start off with giving you a very, very brief overview of what our brain structure looks like. And yeah. Neither of us is a medical doctor, so we're not sort of going into lots of technical detail here. We're not neurobiologists, but we give you a sort of very rough idea about what the brain looks like, and then we explain why it's important.
Yeah, well, actually, I was thinking, actually, if it's okay, just before that, I think, you know, just one of the challenges is, and, you know, why is this important to know in the first place is, you know, often we tend to think ourselves as very logical, rational beings, and that, you know, we make decisions rationally, logically. You know, we like to think on our relationships that we kind of communicate in a very logical, rational way. And but sometimes, I'm sure you've all found that if you get into an argument, sometimes it feels like your body
takes
over.
The window, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like suddenly that logic goes out. I mean, I'm sure most of you have had the experience that sometimes you're in an argument and you forget what you're arguing about in the first place. It's like you just get caught up in the emotion, you get caught up in that intensity.
That's right. So you get very raging, you get very angry, and you literally have this experience of losing your mind, is an expression that's often used.
Yeah, and in so many areas of our life, we respond to things without necessarily too much logic or reason. In fact, many of our decisions are probably more influenced by our emotions. But we like to think that we put a lot of logic and reasoning into that. So helping to understand the structure of the brain and why some of this happens can be so important in our relationships and in other areas of our life too.
Yeah, because I think what you're touching on is a really important point, because when we're thinking about the brain, we always think about the thinking part of our brain, right?
Yeah.
The logical part of our brain, and the brain, in fact, has got other parts to it which are not to do with thinking, quite the opposite, really. So, shall we launch into that?
Yeah, go ahead.
What we're drawing on today is the hand model of the brain by Dr. Daniel Siegel, who is really I just think he's wonderful. I love the work of Daniel Siegel, and very specifically, one of my go-to books that I come back to again and again in my work with clients, and I just read up on it, is called Mindside. So if you come across that, if you're interested in neurobiology, attachment theory, all sorts of ideas about, you know, how we relate to other people and why we do so, Mindside is a fantastic book to pick up. So, the hand model of the brain. Well, Dan Siegel, he came up with this idea of using our fists. So if you sort of look at the fist here in the camera, that's as a representation of our brain. If we open up this fist, we look at our hand. The brain is structured into different parts, and some of these parts are really old, so thousands and thousands of years old, and other parts of the brain are slightly newer in evolutionary terms. So the brain evolved over many, many years from a more simple functioning system, so to speak, to a more and more complex one. So the old part of the brain is this part here, the brain stem. It sits here roughly, is that right?
Yes, we have a spinal cord underneath, which is the brain stem.
So the brain stem, that's the sort of old the old sort of lizard part of our brain, which is just reacting. It's reacting to kind of to any impulses that come in. And moving up a little bit further into the hand, we've got the limbic system. Part of the limbic system is the amygdala, and that's kind of like our internal alarm system, so to speak. So the amygdala enables us to, within split seconds, to make a decision about whether we run, for example, because something is threatening us, or whether we should play dead. Yeah. So in olden days, when we were chased by a tiger, we could either just run away from the tiger as fast as we could, or we could pretend to be dead and play and freeze.
Yeah, so absolutely. So in the brainstem, just before we get to amygdala as well, that's where we're going to have the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system that gets triggered off. Yeah. So it's a bit like the brakes or the accelerator, the bit that's going to signal, you know, again, is the body going to be stimulated for action, or is it going to slow down? Which, you know, in stress is very common. So, you know, if we get stressed, the body goes in, the sympathetic nervous system takes over. And, you know, the heart rate goes up, you get more adrenaline flowing through the system, cortisol. Whereas the parasympathetic nervous system helps to slow down, it helps to regulate that response. Yeah. So this is really important. With the amygdala, again, that's where a lot of that sort of fear response is going to be stimulated, that instant sort of fear and then that fight or flight.
Yeah, so it's the sort of and our responses here, they're automatic, they're instinctual. So when we feel threatened, then we respond, and we respond on a physiological level. We're either mobilizing our body for fight or flight, so we might be our heart might beat faster, we start sweating, for example. So there are all these sort of, we might have clammy hands, yeah? So all sorts of physiological experiences that kind of travel down through our spinal cord and connects us with the rest of the body. So we feel it in our body.
Yeah, and we get that automatic reaction where it's before we even think about things. So, I mean, I can remember a few years ago, I was walking to the end of the pavement, I was going to cross the street, and I'm just about across when suddenly my body jolts, stopped. And I realised there's a car coming, but I hadn't actually seen it consciously. But clearly my unconscious part of my mind had been monitoring, and it's like, just get this, my body just jerks into this standstill response. So that's when there is a threat, your body just responds. You don't even kind of really consciously realise it. Yeah. And we can have that in relationships too, because you know, at this level, we're not really making the difference between, you know, we tend to not distinguish between what's a real physical threat and what maybe a different, you know, a threat that seems to be a threat.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why this is relevant. And we come back to that in a minute about why this is relevant in relationships. So it's about threat. And there's no distinction in the brain as far as the amygdala is concerned about whether this threat is real or perceived. We just react, basically, because we feel threatened. So that's that part of our brain, the amygdala, which is part of the limbic system. That's the sort of, which is called the mammalian brain. That's what we share with all other mammals. And this part of the brain here, the limbic system, that's the part that kind of regulates our emotions. And really, in a nutshell, it's a lot more complicated than that. But any all of our emotional responses here are part of the limbic system.
Yeah, so it's all about, you know, where our emotional center, and we can think, if we take the word emotion, you know, I think Daniel Siegel talks about this as well. I've heard it referred to by other people where it's almost like emotion could stand for evoke motion, because emotions drive us into some sort of behavior very frequently.
For example, attachments. Yeah. Yeah. So the limbic system is there to regulate our attachments. It enables us to form very close bonds with others.
Absolutely.
So, okay, so we've got that. So this is the hand. Here's the brainstem, amygdala, with the amygdala part of the limbic system that enables us to, you know, to create connection with other people. And then the last part of the brain, which is called the cortex or the neocortex, that's the last bit that developed over many, many thousands of years as part of our brain. That's really particularly the part of the cortex, which is called the prefrontal cortex. That is what distinguishes human beings from other mammals. So we're the only living beings that have a prefrontal cortex. And that's the bit, the cortex as a whole is the part that enables us to think, to have rational thoughts, to reflect, to analyze, to have critical thoughts, for example, etc.
Yeah, let's add irrational thoughts.
It's okay.
So it's the part that's enabled us to really kind of develop as kind of a species.
Yes.
And at the same time, it's also the part that maybe in some ways has caused all of our problems terms of our anxieties, our kind of worries and, all of the different things like that.
Absolutely, yes. And I think the part that's also really worth pointing out is a part of the cortex, this part of your brain here, is the prefrontal cortex, which is the bit that, as I say, that only human beings have, which also enables us to think about thinking. It's the sort of meta-critical analysis that we can do with our prefrontal cortex. So not only can we think a thought, we can also think about the thought that we're having and say, that was a good thought, that was a bad thought, that was helpful, that was unhelpful, that kind of thing. So the prefrontal cortex, or the cortex as a whole, sort of basically closes over the limbic system. And, you know, when everything is going well, when we're sort of trundling along, we're feeling nicely balanced, our system is in homeostasis, we feel safe in the world, then we have that kind of model of the brain. So the cortex is closed over. There's a connection here between thought and feeling. There's a nice balance between thought and feeling. We can have a feeling and think about that feeling. So there's a clear sort of holistic experience that we're having, so to speak, in terms of our emotional well-being and our rational thinking about it. Yeah. So now, why is all of this relevant? Why are we talking about this? It's relevant in terms of something that Thomas mentioned earlier on. It's this idea about our limbic system going into a state of fight or flight when we are feeling threatened. And we can feel threatened either by something that we that is a real threat for us, for example, a bus that's coming at us at 100 miles an hour. That's a real threat to our system. Or it can also be a perceived threat. It can be a sort of an implicit memory that we have, that we can't necessarily even connect with something consciously at this point in time. But it can actually be something that triggers us to think that we are in a situation where we are being threatened.
Yeah.
And we feel threatened, for example, if our partner says something to us or does something that triggers us. And what happens when we get triggered? We flip our prefrontal cortex, and basically all we do is we're just reacting. We're reacting through our limbic system. We're reacting by either fighting back, by running away, or by playing dead. These are the three options that we have in our system, in our autonomic nervous system. Why is this relevant? Well, if this is just me here, now if you put up your hand, Tom, so imagine now us as a couple here, both of us flipping our prefrontal cortex. So this is us when we're sort of in a good state, so to speak, when, everything is nicely balanced. Now, Tom says something to me that I'm really not happy about, or that I feel like, wow, that's a real attack. I have to respond to that. I feel really threatened by that. I flip my cortex, I respond to Tom and say blah 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 blah. I shout at him, I tell him this is really out of order, and then you flip your cortex, and then we have two brains doing this.
Yeah.
So we have two brains in this kind of response, actually, where we're not using our thinking faculties, we're just reactive.
Yeah, and this can really escalate out of control. So you're just basically reacting, you're not proactive.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a real problem, like I mentioned, in arguments, where you just get into this argument and you're not even thinking about what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
The argument just takes over, it spirals out of control, and it's just this swarm of emotions that get more and more intense.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be really damaging, because mm-hmm. later on, when your fingers flip back down, mm-hmm. then you start to think about it, then you put all this meaning onto it. And, something that one of you may have said, the thinking part then thinks, how could they say that to me? The fact they said that means that I shouldn't be with this person, or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, this it's not being able to regulate that part of the brain when it went into that emotional response is a big issue.
Yeah, and also I think what's also really important is when we are in this state, when we are in this reactive state, we lose connection because we're just entirely focused on ourselves. We're just focused on our survival, so to speak. This is the inbuilt survival system that enables us to look after ourselves and to keep ourselves safe. But as I said, we just do it for ourselves. What we lose in this moment is connectivity. So we're not connecting with another person. In order to move into being receptive to another person, to move away from being reactive to being receptive, we need to basically use this part of the neocortex that enables us to think and also to empathically respond and connect with another person.
Yeah, so part of this, you know, it's really important that we have to have this part of the brain, so the cortex involved, to have an understanding of what's going on for us emotionally and in terms of behaviourally, and also an understanding of what's going on for the other person. So we need to be able to read both, and then, you know, it's about us, it's about them, and about us together, so about the we. So we need to have this type of understanding going on in order to have that empathic way of kind of communicating with the other person.
Yes, yeah. And to create this connection between our emotional states or in our limbic system and our thinking, so, you know, to our capacity to reflect on our emotional states. Yeah, so why is this relevant? So if we have two people like this, yeah, in these kind of emotional states, in a state of survival, in a state of threat, these two people, when we're in this kind of state, cannot communicate, cannot basically resolve any conflict, cannot really come to some way of connecting with each other. And that's why it's really important to, when you notice this, when you notice that both of you are doing this in an argument or, you know, an argument in a conflictual situation, it would be really important to say, okay, well, we're both in a state of just being reactive now. We're not taking in what the other is saying. We are just concerned with our own emotional states, with our own survival. So we might have to pause here. We might have to actually come back to this after we've had the opportunity to calm down our system, for our parasympathetic nervous system to spring into action, to kind of basically calm down again, to, you know, for our heart rate to regulate again, for our breathing to come down, to basically come into a state again, a state of homeostasis where we feel more balanced. And that's when we can then come back and pick up the particular disagreements that we had with our partner.
Yeah, so maybe one of the first things to think about now is, what are some of your triggers that may trigger you into that state of feeling threatened, or where you kind of have that emotional takeover? So you might think about arguments or other situations that when they happen, you feel this sense of threat. You feel that you just go into responding rather than kind of being proactive. So when you're reactive rather than proactive. And that could be an argument when a conflict starts. And that might be because when you were a child, maybe conflict led to a real sense of threat when you were younger. I mean, I've known this with somebody, for example, who any time there was a knock on the door, they went into a sense of feeling threatened, and they had this stress response out of control. And it turns out that as a child, a bailiff had come to the house, knocked on the door, and basically taken all of their possessions. And at a very young age, that was so distressing that now, anytime the door knocked, there was this immediate way where the fingers flipped. Immediately went into survival mode. So it could be things, you know, associations from the past, things that now to other people might seem illogical, but to you it's totally normal because you've learned it at some point in your life that this potentially is a threat. So think about, what are the threats? Is it the conflict itself? Mm. Is it the way that maybe your partner looks at you?
Mm.
Yeah. Is it, you know, if you're currently single and going on dates, is it when, you know, when you get a text that comes in like an hour later and suddenly that beep sometimes gives you that sense of threat?
Mm.
Like, am I going to be abandoned? Or whatever it happens to be, it kind of brings you into this response.
Mm.
So think about what are your triggers? So I think that's one of the first things. Think about, you know, actually take a moment after this podcast and write down, what are some of the triggers that put you into this state of reaction?
Mm. And it might not always be so easy to work that out, obviously, because sometimes, as I say, some of it is the kind of implicit memory that you hold of events that might have happened, that are likely to have happened many, many years ago that you can't even recall, particularly when they happened in childhood. Mm. It might not necessarily be part of your awareness, and it might take some time to work that out. But it's, as Tom said, I mean, it's still worth kind of reflecting a little bit on this. Is there something that I'm really, that I can really bring into my awareness here that is a very obvious trigger for me that gets me into a state of alertness, of fight, flight, freeze?
Well, I think you can be aware of the trigger, but you might not be aware of where a trigger came from.
Yeah.
But what's important is just to be aware of the trigger. So just reflect over the last few weeks or even over the next week. Are there things that trigger you into that state where you feel a sense of threat?
Mm.
So you don't need to necessarily track it back to the original events, but just notice now what those triggers are in your current experience.
Mm.
And then I think the next thing, well, now you're aware of a trigger, is what can you do about it?
Mm.
And one thing, well, it might involve therapy where you track things back, or, you know, we talk about as well knowing yourself in our course, The Relationship Maze. But another thing to do is thinking about how you can slow your system down.
Mm-hmm.
So how you can start to regulate some of that response.
Absolutely.
So as we talked about, you know, the parasympathetic nervous system gets triggered. Sorry, the sympathetic nervous system gets triggered when there's that threat.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to help the parasympathetic nervous system start to regulate some of that response.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you can do is just with your breath.
Mm-hmm.
So start to slow your breathing down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it sounds simple, and in some ways it is, but your breathing is highly linked to your emotional state. And it is a way that we know that if you start to slow your breathing down, for example, breathing in to a count of three, maybe holding your breath for a count of three, and then breathing out for a count of three, or doing box breathing, which I think we talked about in another podcast.
Yeah.
I think on our podcast on anxiety, I'm not 100% sure.
Mm-hmm.
Slowing the breathing down helps your parasympathetic nervous system start to regulate some of that response.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not going to totally eradicate it. It's not going to totally get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it just can help you settle it down. So you can start to kind of get back into, you know, start to get some of your thinking processes engaged with that immediate response.
Yeah, it's the sort of bottoms-up approach, basically, that through the spinal, you breathe, your body slows down, and through the spinal cord, basically, messages travel up into your brain, telling yourself you're safe, and then you can kind of get into this calm state. Yeah. So anything that helps you in that regard to kind of calm your system down through breathing, when you are in a state of hyper arousal, you're very angry, for example, with your partner, you're in the middle of an argument, you flip your frontal cortex, prefrontal cortex, then, you know, it might just be also going for a walk, you know. It's the time out. Have time out. That's really important. Having time out and then doing something that kind of slows you down, go for a walk, do a Sudoku. Some people like doing that, actually.
Yeah, for me, I think that puts me in an anxious state.
Me too.
Yeah.
You know, anything that sort of, that kind of, that works for you, really.
Yeah, and I think if you regularly find yourself getting into this sort of state when you're in an argument, maybe between you and your partner or whoever it is that you get into this disagreement with, you could even have safe words between you that you agree before. Like if you know that you're getting into this, this emotional response without thinking, that one of you says a word, which could even be a slightly amusing word, but it's agreed on beforehand, that as soon as you hear that word, it's time just to take a little bit of time out, maybe go for a walk, do some breathing, and then come back to discussing this at a time when you've settled your emotional system down.
Absolutely. And then, you know, you can basically relate to each other using your neocortex, your thinking capacity, your reflective capacities, which will then also enable you to have some capacity to really step into each other's shoes, because ultimately connection gets created by developing capacity for understanding your partner, understanding where they're coming from, having some sense of their internal world, what drives them, what motivates them. So when you can be in this kind of more balanced state, you have that capacity for each other. Whereas if you are just, as I say, if you're just sort of in survival mode, you run on your own. You're not connecting, actually.
Yeah, so when your brain flips like this, you're never going to be able to kind of have that appropriate sort of communication. Mm. When your brain's like this, the communication more is like this. But actually, you really want this without the this. You are kind of the fingers folded over, so you can have that thinking,
yeah.
and actually start to connect and have empathy. Because in order to really resolve any of sort of discussions with somebody else, we need to have that emotional intelligence. We need to be able to have empathy.
I'm aware that this is a podcast and not everyone is watching the video, so they might not have been very clear about what we're doing. We're waving our hands a lot in front of the camera now, so you might not have had a really clear understanding of what we are demonstrating. Just to sort of go back to this, in case anyone wasn't entirely sure what the hand model of the brain, how that works. So imagine that you have an open hand in front of you. You fold your thumb into the middle of your hand. That's your amygdala here, and your limbic system around the hand. The bottom of your hand is the brainstem. Now, if you fold all of your four fingers over your thumb into the middle of your hand, that's your neocortex, and the middle part of your knuckles here is the prefrontal cortex. So that's kind of what we are demonstrating here with our hand flipping in front of the camera.
Yeah, and if you are listening to this and want to see it more visually, we will also put this onto YouTube as well. So yeah. We'll put a link for that.
Yeah, so you might want to just have a look at that.
Yeah.
Or, of course, you can have a look at Daniel Siegel's fantastic Mindsight book.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think we'll follow this up a little bit more in another podcast as well, exploring how also attachment styles, which we talked about in another podcast, which review that as well if you're interested in attachment styles. But we'll look as well about how the brain functioning also can relate to attachment styles, or attachment styles to the way that your brain functions.
Yeah, that's super interesting as well. That's sort of something that really excites me to kind of think about, that neurobiology and attachment. And again, this is a field that was developed and looked at in a lot of detail by Daniel Siegel.
Yeah, so the takeaway from today is just be aware of your triggers. Be aware of when you go into this way of reacting rather than being proactive. And find ways to slow yourself down so that you can start to get back into this way where you can really communicate in a way that's going to lead to much better relationships.
Yep, so, and you might really use this hand model. Just visualize it yourself. I mean, instead of a code word, you can just both flip your hands up, basically your four fingers up. That shows that you are in a reactive mode and you should stop this communication at this point in time.
And remember to flip the four fingers up.
Absolutely, not just one. Good.
That's right. So tune in next week. Please press subscribe if you haven't already. And please give us a review. And we look forward to speaking with you next time.
We look forward to seeing you then. Okay, take good care. Bye.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. If you'd like to find out more about creating great relationships, go to therelationshipmaze.com, and I look forward to seeing you there. And remember to tune in to the next podcast.